I'm Richard Evans from EMC Arts, and this is the Arts Forward podcast, where a guest or two joins me to explore the challenges and opportunities facing the arts and culture sector right now to do things differently, to do things they've never done before. This month, I'm here in New York with Eric Sanderson, a senior conservation ecologist at the Wildlife Conservation Society, and Mary Miss, artist and founder of the City as Living Laboratory. Both are leaders of new projects supported by the Rockefeller Foundation's Cultural Innovation Fund, which provides grants of up to $250,000 to groundbreaking initiatives that enrich New York City's cultural life. Eric and Mary, we invited you both here today because your projects share some interesting common ground. You're both using art and design to make environmental sustainability issues tangible to the general public. Thank you for joining me, and welcome to you both.
Thank you.
It's nice to be here.
Eric, as I understand it, you're creating a new online platform where anyone can log on and use a mapping tool to design their own vision of an ecologically sustainable New York City. So how is the website going to work?
That's right. So we're building this website where you'll be able to log on and to go to any block in Manhattan and to see how carbon, water, and biodiversity work in that block today and contrast it with what was there 400 years ago when Henry Hudson first came into New York Harbor, before it was a city. And you can change whatever features you want. You can create your own vision, the block scale or multiple blocks. You can extrapolate to the city as a whole, and then you'll be able to share your vision, your ideas, with other people that will log on to the website.
And you can see the ecological impact of your choices, is that right?
That's right. You'll be able to, the website will actually try to measure how carbon flows through that block or through that series of blocks, how water passes through that block when it rains and when it snows, and how that block provides habitat for animals, including counting up the human population.
And over time, Eric, if we use this tool, we'll all be able to see each other's visions of the city?
That's right. That's right. We want people to be able to share their visions and, in some sense, to democratize the planning process, but to put it into an ecological framework. So you'll be able to see, you know, Mayor Bloomberg's vision. You'll be able to see, you know, my son's vision and anybody else who wants to log on and share their vision.
And Mary, you'll be creating a series of public interventions along the corridor of Broadway that highlight environmental issues for citizens at street level. How are you envisioning these interventions?
I had this image of the corridor of Broadway becoming a place where people could come to see new ideas about the city on the ground, to see the ideas that city planning or the Department of Transportation was thinking about up at the departmental level and get them down on the street. I would love to imagine that people could begin to explore a series of hubs or neighborhoods along this corridor. I love the image of somebody being at Bowling Green and really being tantalized to go on to the next site and the next site until they go from the tip of Manhattan to the top of the Bronx, stopping at maybe 20 different sites along the way and really seeing the diversity of the city from the financial district to Van Cortlandt Park up at the top, but also how connected it all is.
Let me ask each of you, what assumptions do you see your work now as challenging or questioning? Eric?
Well, I should preface by saying that I did a lot of work about what the old ecology of Manhattan was, the ecology before the city was here.
Right.
We created a website before that allowed you to see what all the plants and animals were in each block. People really love that. But taking this to the sort of ecosystem scale and thinking about carbon flows connects it to the problems the city has now. You know, the city has a lot of problems about ecosystem dysfunction, like what does it do with its stormwater and what it's going to do about its greenhouse emissions. And from an ecological perspective, these are problems that come from, you know, paving over your forest and covering up your soil. But there's new ideas that are coming out of the urban design and urban planning world, the engineering world, the technological world, that makes me think that maybe it's possible to build a city that can be a city and be as urban and lively of city, but also works as an ecosystem and satisfies all the kinds of meanings for the city, including a sense of connection to nature.
I'm going to ask the same question of Mary. And what it is about New York City or about environmental advocacy or about your own work that this new project somehow challenges or calls into question?
I really think it's an assumption about the role that artists can play in the culture. It's something that's really been of interest to me since my earliest days as an artist, starting off in the 70s. I felt that it would really be important for artists to be part of the culture and the discussion about the issues of our times. But I think it's a hard thing for a city to be able to imagine. And with this project, I'm really trying to set an example for the city to show them that they have this tremendous resource available to them with artists, landscape architects, designers, to make these issues that are so important accessible in this emotionally engaging way that art is able to do.
And Mary, help us to understand how you might make these issues tangible.
Well, I think there is something that if you can engage people in a visceral way. At one point in another project, I was showing the flood level with a series of 6-inch blue diameter markers scattered through the center of a town. And this issue, which scientists and the city government had been talking about, was so outside of the realm of experience that nobody took it seriously. But when they had that marker that they could stand against and see that it's 18 feet over their head in one spot and ankle high in another, it's keeping a constant level, it made it a real direct experience.
So Mary, as an independent artist and Eric as an ecologist at a fairly traditional scientific organization, you work in very different environments. I'm curious how these different roles you occupy in the cultural sector enable your work. Mary, what freedom would you say being an independent artist gives you in exploring environmental issues at street level? And how does it make your goals more challenging?
Well, when I started this project, it's no small thing to say you want to take on the corridor of Broadway. I decided very intentionally to do this as my own project. Other institutions within the city had already carved out their territory of interest. If you were talking to a museum, how could you get high enough on the agenda to get the funds raised to do it? Or if you were talking to an arts organization, they already have their particular interests. So I decided to take it on alone. The challenge is then coming to city government with this idea as an individual and having credibility, even if, like me, you've been around for a while, right, working in the city. It probably would have been impossible if I didn't have this record of having worked here for decades. But this challenge of meeting the requirements, which aren't, you know, written in stone where you can go and go to the Bible and say, oh, I already know ahead of time I can't do this. It's quite challenging and difficult.
And are there freedoms, though, that make up for that?
The freedom is that I'm doing, I'm able to take this vision forward that I am developing with my partners like Eric and others that are helping me do this.
And what about for you, Eric? What is the balance for you between challenges and freedoms from your own position?
Well, I'm very fortunate in my position because I work, as you said, for a large international conservation organization that also has a commitment as a cultural institution here in New York. We run the Bronx Zoo and the New York Aquarium and the other zoos in the city. And so in that space, I've been able to find this room, this intellectual room, if you like, to bring some ideas about ecology and conservation to a place that most ecologists and conservationists don't think has any ecological value, which is the city. And I think from the city planning and architecture side, people have kind of forgotten that every place is an ecosystem and every place has its own nature. And so I find science actually to be very liberating and very kind of radical in some ways. You know, it says these are a certain set of ideas, and what are the implications of those ideas, and what are the implications of those ideas, and you can follow that as long as you can muster the information and the data and the rationale to do it. And also, I come from an institution that has a history of sending people literally to the hardest places on Earth to do conservation, to the Tibetan Plateau or the deep parts of the African forest, or, you know, the Galapagos Islands many, many years ago. And it has a 100-year record of doing these things. And it's a truth of the world that it's a much smaller place, and there's fewer of those really wild places you can go that nobody's been. In fact, there's no place nobody's been, but there are still places intellectually nobody's been.
And there's parts of Central Park, we understand.
That's right.
Now, Eric, I know you've called this project a category breaker. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Actually, that was what my boss said when I told him I got the grant from the Rockefeller Foundation. He said, oh, that's a category breaker, all right. And I think that's this idea of application in the city. That's a category breaker for WCS, sort of breaking in into the trying architecture and urban planning and trying to say something about our conservation mission in the place where we all live. And it's a category breaker, too, in terms of the technology we're using, in terms of creating this website where you can actually change the city and see real-time changes in the scientific flows. And then something that we've discovered through Manahata actually is what Mary's known all along, which is the value of art. And art, not just to connect people's hearts, but that's important, but as a cultural changer, as a way of actually changing the way people think about and conceive of the city. So just the other day, a colleague of mine who does kind of measuring effectiveness sorts of activities for WCS was saying, well, Eric, how do you know your website's going to be effective? And I said, come back in 400 years and we'll find out.
So this, in many ways, it is quite different from work you've done in the past. I'm wondering, Mary, from your point of view, is this a project that's very different at all? Are there aspects that are really different for you?
I would say over the past 3 or 4 years, I've been radically transforming my practice. And it's such an exciting territory. As an artist, you always want to be exploring a new place. And this is really allowing me to do that. I was working on very large projects like a 30-acre sewage treatment plant or a half mile of waterfront in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, or the grounds of a museum in North Carolina. But time after time, the projects kept getting canceled, and arts money has been diminishing radically over the past decade. I realized if I wanted to continue my work as an artist, I was going to have to rethink how to approach this. People laugh when I say that I've decided to try and work in a very modest way with small-scale elements, because, of course, I'm trying to take on Broadway, which is no small task.
Yeah.
But the elements themselves and what you interact with, they are very modest. You know, a mirror that might be 12 inches or at the most 3 feet in diameter, markings on the pavement. They're very modest, but we're trying to find a means of engagement through those. But I have to say, I think that also this has been radically changing the game as far as funding, in the sense that my money, a good portion of my money to do this project, is coming not only from the Rockefeller Cultural Innovation Fund, but from the National Science Foundation. And I received for another project in Indianapolis focusing on the White River a very substantial grant from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. So within the past couple of years, you know, there's been this money coming in to support this work. And with Eric's help, we've just applied for a much larger implementation grant for the National Science Foundation. So I'm really trying to invent a whole other way of thinking about artists, about the role of art, about how it gets funded, about what it can do. And it's interesting.
Now, you referred to that National Science Foundation project you're applying for, and I know you've worked together, and I'm interested in what you're learning from each other. Eric, I'm wondering how Mary's approach to the public exploration of sustainability issues in New York City informs your own.
Well, I mean, one part of that is the individual scale.
Yes.
So, I think like Mary, like she said, of other scientists, I tend to try and think of systems and how systems work. And it's hard to imagine, it's hard to imagine how scientific ideas, for example, all the evidence about climate change, how that works in the real world, right, with individuals. And I think that's why a lot of scientists have been sort of beaten back into their shells, right? Like, you know, it used to be you would do research and you would put the results out and you would do a radio interview you'd write a newspaper article or you'd have an article written about your work. And that was what was going to change the world. And we've found out that you put information out there, but it's in this much larger political milieu, and sometimes it doesn't matter at all, no matter how hard you were or how careful you were. And, you know, climate change is a primary example of that. And I think that's beaten a lot of scientists back into their shells. What I'm trying to do now is reach out to the individual scale, like Mary's doing, and give those people the kinds of issues that I'm thinking about and the sort of ability to think at the systems level. So trying to marry those two things. And I'm not sure I would have gotten there if it wasn't for the sort of collaboration and the conversations that Mary and I have had.
Right. And what about from your perspective, Mary? What are you learning from that kind of conversation?
I feel like I've been on a runaway toboggan for the past year, talking with Eric and Stuart Gaffin and Cynthia Rosenzweig and many wonderful scientists who have been incredibly generous with their time. I just can't say enough about how much I appreciate that. One of the things that's made working with Eric very interesting is I think that there are kind of similar attitudes or interests, as strange as that may seem, you know, that are at the heart of the work, that's why it's worked so well in spite of each of us having alien languages maybe that we're trying to learn. I think I've had to understand more about the goals than I ever knew before, because I always describe myself as Jane Doe, the person who does not know about the systems that, you know, affect climate change. And I say, explain it to me so that I can explain it to others. If I can get it, you know, then other people should be able, any curious person would be able to get it.
I'm wondering if there's anything unique about doing these two projects here in New York City as opposed to any other city in the U.S. or indeed in the world. Mm. Are there particular things about New York City which attracted you to this project, or which you think are germane to it?
You know, one of the things I've observed about New Yorkers, not having grown up here, I grew up in California and moved here 12 years ago, is that New Yorkers are intensely interested in their place. They're just insanely interested about knowing everything that's going on in their block and their neighborhood. And if you can say something new about that, something they didn't know before, then they just, you know, they're wildly appreciative of that. And so that's an opportunity to go right to somebody's heart. Even, you know, in my case, the most hard-burnt urbanite, right? the person who thinks that they love the city and they don't care anything about the woods or the soil or nature or anything else. If I can tell them something about the woods and the nature in the context of the place they live, then it goes to their heart and they eat it right up. And of course, I think something that attracts both of us, because we both do work other places as well, is the archetypal nature of New York City. This idea that if you do it here, perhaps it actually can go to other cities in the country and other cities in the world at a time where so many people are moving to cities and looking to cities for so many solutions.
Now, you're each about 8 months into your 2-year grant period, and it'll have been over a year since you first proposed the project. I'm wondering what surprises you've encountered so far along the way.
Well, we had a big shock recently. We've been trying to talk to the vendors that are going to help us build the website, do a lot of the technical back end. And someone told me on Monday night that although Rockefeller was very generous, that we had a $500,000 to $1 million project on our hands just to do the part that he wanted to do. And wow. I have about 5% of that amount of money available for that activity. We're a conservation organization and we're used to doing well with very little. So I'm confident we'll get something, but it's interesting the sort of interaction between the funding level and the way that frames your ideas, and then how that frames what you're actually able to put on the ground or put on the computer,
and how you have to pace it.
That's right. Makes sense. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And of course, these things, you know, they all have to move in coordination with each other. So there's a scientific aspect of what we're doing, which I think is fairly novel. There's interactions we're having with other people. We had a charrette recently that Mary was kind enough to attend, where we're asking architects and urban planners and real estate developers how they would use this thing. And then there's this technical back end part of it that we're thinking about all the time, like how are we actually going to make it work on the computer.
And what about for you, Mary? Have there been surprises as you've got going on this?
Well, I think I didn't know how things were going to be going this time a year ago. And for instance, we proposed that we wanted to do 20 hubs along the course of Broadway, the length of Broadway. And our people were working with the Department of Transportation met with us recently and said we could do 5 hubs. Well, that's a big difference. And I think maybe as we continue to develop the ideas and go back, there will be further discussion. But it's not going to be able to be implemented in quite the way we had thought out. But it turns out that, you know, I think whether you're a scientist or an artist, it's always trying to find a new way around the obstacle that's in front of you and not accepting no, you know, for an answer. So it's making us begin to think about those maybe primary hubs that could be there, but then with perhaps satellite hubs between, where there is something that allows you to go out and investigate that territory. And then that makes us think about interim sites even between the 20 hubs. So we may actually come out with an even more consistent treatment of the length. Mm-hmm. And this is something Eric and I have been thinking about from the beginning.
It's so interesting to me, as you both do this innovative work, how you're constantly searching to make the constraints that you come up against be enabling ones, be ones that actually, in a sense, you use your imagination and your creativity to turn into perhaps benefits in the end.
Yes.
And we'll all look forward to seeing how those, you know, turn out. But let me end by just asking you a bit about this issue of effectiveness. You raised this a little earlier, Eric, and I'm wondering how, as you move forward, you're going to test the effectiveness of the projects. How are you going to know that you're being successful, or know where to change course?
Well, in the short run, we'll be able to look at the statistics for our website. We'll be able to see how many visions get added and how much time people spend looking at the visions. So in that sense, well, I think we'll be able to say something in the very short term. But I think for me personally, those are sort of activity level measures. You know, the thing that I value most about the work we've done on Manahata, and I hope will be the case here, is when somebody refers to it in a conversation completely independent of me and it gets back to me, or I was in a meeting a while ago and someone, I said something and a woman came up to me afterwards and said, did you know at my church someone had a whole morning all about your project? And it had nothing to do with me. You know, I wasn't there. They did it just on their own because I thought it was valuable. And I think that's how you know you're in the cultural fabric of the city. As one of my colleagues said, you're a meme. You're an idea. And, you know, if I can get Manahata 2409 to be an idea about cities of the future and how we imagine cities in the future, then that would be success for me.
Eric Sanderson is a senior conservation ecologist at the Wildlife Conservation Society. And Mary Miss is an artist and founder of The City as a Living Laboratory. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks for listening. This is the monthly Arts Forward podcast. This is the first of 6 podcasts over the next 2 years, featuring the grantees of the Cultural Innovation Fund. The podcasts are part of a larger initiative of EMC Arts to document the impact of innovative work in the 16 organisations funded in 2011. To find out more and to watch audio postcards introducing all 16 projects, visit artsforward.org. That's artsfwd.org. You can also check out our multimedia profiles of other innovative organisations from all around the country, a blog, this podcast series, and much more at www.artsforward.org. That's artsfwd.org. I'm Richard Evans of EMC Arts in New York.